put it together, but you can at least know how to use it. It allows proprietary technologies to play with one another. Well, components in this environment have to be aware of themselves, they have to be able to interoperate, and they have to have security down at the component level. So we're talking about, for example, a sensor that you would wear that has to authenticate the provider for that data before the data even leaves the sensor. Otherwise, you can't assume that that sensor will have extended access to the electronic patient record for that individual. So each component has to know enough about itself to describe it to something else, and also how to interpret its data, but more importantly, use it and how it may be used. One thing about regulating systems of this sort is you have to be able to control environments where sensors were not designed to work in that environment. And if you have a sensor that's intended, for example, for a non-medical purpose, it has to be able to tell you, look, I can give you this data, but you can't store it in an electronic record, and I won't allow you to because that's not how it was constructed. So the thought is that in these systems, you really want to build them on the fly based on the needs of the patient. So this scenario shows that you come into, it shows a medical system on the right, and maybe the device on the left is a pulse oximeter. It might enter the environment and say, hi, I'm here, and the system says, who are you? And it says, I'm a pulse oximeter. I can give you heart rate and blood oxygen saturation, but because of the way I'm designed, I can also give you extra hemoglobin derivatives because I have 4 wavelengths of light instead of 2. And if you don't know how to use me, you can go externally out to this website and find my drivers and information on how you can exchange data with me. So it's more than just the idea of a normal USB type plug-in between a mouse and your computer system. It's the ability for a component to establish its context and tell the system how to take advantage of it. Let me illustrate these concepts with some early work. When I worked at Sandia National Laboratories, we spent considerable time looking at device architectures for telemedicine. And one of our general thoughts was, if you look at the center of this honeycomb diagram, there's the word backplane. That would represent the operating system, for example, for a medical device. Medical devices tend to have 7 service areas, including the backplane that comprise those devices. And the thought is that if you can provide hooks between each of the elements of the honeycomb, you can conceivably, in a Lego-like manner, construct devices on the fly that are matched to the needs of your patient. So if you look at the really small-scale systems, for example, the personal status monitors illustrated on the left, the thought is that they may have medical devices and some type of button user interface, their own internal operating system and a comm mode, but there are no electronic records, there are no protocols on board. You can even get down to the very simple sensors or systems that we have today that may just be a device, an interface, and an internal system. They just display their number and that's it. Well, a typical point-to-point telemedicine system is constructed in such a way that the caregiver station has everything on it except for the devices. The patient station has everything on it except for the patient records and processing, and maybe some local patient records. But the thought is to reconfigure that system in such a way that if you're a set of vendors that are very good at providing diagnostic services, for example, or patient records, that you can compete at that level just based on your own internal service area, but provide access to that capability to these other components of the system. So we're talking now about a system that's just not a chunk of technology on either end, but rather a distributed set of technology where the geographic boundaries are kind of in some sense not the important part of the system. We did build a prototype system based on these ideas. We used a combination of CORBA, if you're familiar with it, from the Object Management Group, and Enterprise Java Beans, we called it CORBA Beans, to build a system where we provided virtual interfaces, in this case to a USB hub that had instruments connected to it, but the internal architecture was based on the honeycomb diagram. I wanted to state very quickly, or at least show you very quickly, a couple of the things we've been working on recently in our lab. The research goals, as they're stated here, are to look at point-of-care systems where we concentrate on plug-and-play infrastructures and the fact that we're going to eventually allow these devices to talk directly with electronic patient records. We have chosen light-based sensors, I guess in some sense, because I like to work in that area. as a target, and also because I believe light-based sensors can give you a lot of added functionality that you can't really find in some of these others, besides the fact that they don't provide an electrical contact to tissue. I know this is a complicated slide. Let me see if I can help you very briefly. The home is illustrated in this box inside the light green area. The thought is that there are many services provided in the home, and these include wearable and remote sensors on the patient. But those data are not always analyzed in that local environment. If you look at the boxes that have the yellow background, these might be services, for example, in the upper left, vital parameter processing modules, services that take the data that come in from those sensors and process them and then send the results back to the home from that external connection. Or, for example, continuous monitoring modules in the lower part of the diagram where you're doing trend analysis, but these might be algorithms that sit in a local hospital rather than inside the individual's home. We realize the importance of a pervasive sensor environment in the home. We also realize the importance of trying to tie this traditional medicine, and that means trying to find alternatives for the traditional vital signs. And the thought here is that the patient can walk around in their own home with a data logger, in this case it's on their fanny pack, that talks to a suite of sensors that they wear. If they leave the home and go, you know, walk for an hour or go take a drive, those data are stored in their data logger, and then either when they go to a mall, pass by a mall kiosk, or go back to their home, those data are uploaded to a Bluetooth compliant station and then stored in their record. Where I guess it's relatively important, in the bottom part of this slide, we're using Bluetooth for telemetry and device discovery, but we're using medical information bus to allow the devices to associate and then to use the nomenclature standards that are built into that plug-and-play mechanism. So like I said, Bluetooth is great. It provides you a wireless network, but it doesn't really give you the rules of engagement. You know, there's not a good traffic cop built into Bluetooth for building medical systems or deciding which components can talk to one another. The type of hardware we're working on, a data logger, the current version of the data logger is shown on the left. It has Bluetooth connections to the sensors and also to a base station. And on the right are two MIB implementations of just an ECG and a pulse oximeter. And, you know, these ideas can be extended to other devices, of course, some of which we think are going to be light-based sensors. And the reason I included this slide is if you look at a traditional pulse oximeter, it will tell you heart rate and blood oxygen saturation. But in the process of determining those numbers, it throws away a lot of good data about the state of health of the patient. There's respiration data in those signals, data about motion. Vessel hemodynamics is one thing that we're looking at to try to use light-based sensors as an alternative for a blood pressure cuff to indicate levels of hypertension. A really important one is wearer identity. You know, this is the thought that the sensor itself can authenticate the patient before it acquires those data and sends them up to the electronic patient record. Let me skip the educational slides for sake of time. I did want to note one thing, and this may catch you by surprise in some sense, but we're trying to take these technologies and see what environments we can use them in that might help us generate a good economy of scale. And, you know, the thought we considered was that if you can take this technology and migrate it into animal monitoring, in the state of Kansas, for example, we have 5 to 7 million animals that come through the slaughterhouses every year just in our state alone. But the technology needs of not really a patient in this case, but the measurand, the animal, technology needs are very similar to what you find in the home. You have devices that acquire signals, you have a need for telemetry, you have a need for mobile wearable units, and systems that reconfigure themselves dynamically depending on which sensors come into play and which are not relevant at the time. So this happens to be the current unit that we're using with a cow collar, where it shows a light-based sensor that we're using in a cow ear tag as an alternative to some of the implantable or large sensors that are available today. I have two slides that I would very briefly like to use to state some key messages. The first is that the home healthcare model is going to change dramatically, and I'm sure that doesn't surprise you. I think the kinds of episodic care systems that we see today are going to be replaced by closed-loop systems that make decisions on behalf of the patient, and that infrastructures that would provide this include component confederacies. There are other ways you can build these systems, of course. But, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the graphic at the bottom of this slide is important, that interoperability and security really are two of the keys to getting vendor competition and economy of scale to decrease cost in these systems. This is a complex environment. There are many variables that have to come into play and correctly in order for it to work, or it's not going to happen at all. Standards are a challenge. You're asking for consensus for entities, companies, for example, that have competing goals, where it may not be to their advantage to have a standards-based system that they develop. And technology is changing so quickly that to try and base a standard on it is, you know, it's a moving target. It's very difficult to put resources into that environment. The surety and regulation, which I think Bill is going to address in his talk, is very important here, because what we're talking about is constructing systems on the fly, and you don't have the kind of control over this that you might have for a standalone system that goes through the regular FDA approval process. You're asking these devices to talk securely to electronic patient records, and you've got to have a new set of rules of engagement in place for devices that can only talk to other devices based on what the roles of those devices are. You have systems with boundaries that are hard to define, and very importantly, systems based on components, you can't always predict which components are going to interact with which other components. In computer science, they call this model checking, where you simulate interactions between components in order to see where failures would occur. I know this was very brief, but if you want to contact me, my number and email address are on this slide. I'd be happy to talk with you at any time. Thank you very much.
Okay, exactly on time. Well done.
Right.
I'm particularly grateful. Are there any questions for Steve this day? Okay. Yes.
You mentioned about the animal study. What about both of the people at the zoos?
At the zoos, uh-huh. Thank you.
Smart zoos.
I'd like to mention an oversight that I had in my presentation yesterday, many oversights, but one in particular is represented by Steve Warren. One of the competitions at NSF is called the Career Award, a five-year do what you want to do more or less. Steve is in his third year of a Career Award, and this is part of the result from that. So, and that was, he received it in competition with God knows how many, 600 or 700 proposals come in, and next month is the next cycle for that. So, I think you will agree with me that the Career Award isn't such a bad idea.